Chapter 4. Do you now like a man with a rope round his neck? What do you imagine I am? A being in revolt? No. It's you thinkers who are in everlasting revolt. I am one of the resigned. When the necessity of this heavy work came to me, and I understood that it had to be done, what did I do? Did I exult? Did I take pride in my purpose? Did I try to weigh its worth and consequences? No. I was resigned. I thought God's will be done. Apostrophe, he threw himself full length on Razumov's bed, and putting the backs of his hands over his eyes remained perfectly motionless and silent. Not even the sound of his breathing could be heard. The dead stillness of the room remained undisturbed till in the darkness Razumov said gloomily, "Halden." "Yes," answered the other readily, quite invisible now on the bed, and without the slightest stir. "Isn't it time for me to start?" "Yes, brother." The other was heard, lying still in the darkness, as though he were talking in his sleep. "The time has come to put fate to the test." He paused, then gave a few lucid directions in the quiet impersonal voice of a man in a trance. Razumov made ready without a word of answer. As he was leaving the room, the voice on the bed said after him, "Go with God, thou silent soul." On the landing, moving softly, Razumov locked the door and put the key in his pocket. 2. The words and events of that evening must have been graven, as if with a steel tool, on Mr. Razumov's brain, since he was able to write his relation with such fullness and precision a good many months afterwards. The record of the thoughts which assailed him in the street is even more minute and abundant. They seem to have rushed upon him with the greater freedom, because his thinking powers were no longer crushed by Halden's presence, the appalling presence of a great crime, and the stunning force of a great fanaticism. On looking through the pages of Mr. Razumov's diary, I own that a hush of thoughts is not an adequate image. The more adequate description would be a tumult of thoughts, the faithful reflection of the state of his feelings. The thoughts in themselves were not numerous, they were like the thoughts of most human beings, few and simple, but they cannot be reproduced here in all their exclamatory repetitions which went on in an endless and weary turmoil, for the walk was long. If to the Western reader they appear shocking, inappropriate, or even improper, it must be remembered that as to the first, this may be the effect of my crude statement. For the rest, I will only remark here that this is not a story of the West of Europe. Nations, it may be, have fashioned their governments, but the governments have paid them back in the same coin. It is unthinkable that any young Englishman should find himself in Razumov's situation. This being so, it would be a vain enterprise to imagine what he would think. The only safe surmise to make is that he would not think as Mr. Razumov thought at this crisis of his fate. He would not have an hereditary and personal knowledge, or the means by which historical autocracy represses ideas, guards its power, and defends its existence. By an act of mental extravagance, he might imagine himself arbitrarily thrown into prison, but it would never occur to him, unless he were delirious, and perhaps, not even then, that he could be beaten with whips as a practical measure either of investigation or of punishment. This is but a crude and obvious example of the different conditions of Western thought. I don't know that this danger occurred, specially, to Mr. Razumov. No doubt it entered unconsciously into the general dread, and the general appallingness of this crisis. Razumov, as has been seen, was aware of more subtle ways in which an individual may be undone by the proceedings of a despotic government. A simple expulsion from the university, the very least that could happen to him, with an impossibility to continue his studies anywhere, was enough to ruin utterly a young man depending entirely upon the development of his natural abilities for his place in the world. He was a Russian, and for him to be implicated meant simply sinking into the lowest social depths amongst the hopeless and the destitute, the nightbirds of the city. The peculiar circumstances of Razumov's parentage, or rather of his lack of parentage, should be taken into the account of his thoughts. And he remembered them too. He had been lately reminded of them in a peculiarly atrocious way by this fatal Alden. "Because I haven't that, must everything else be taken away from me?" he thought. He nerved himself for another effort to go on. Along the roadway, sledges glided phantom-like, unjingling through a fluttering whiteness on the black face of the night. "Or it is a crime," he was saying to himself. "Murder is a murder. Though, of course, some sort of liberal institutions." A feeling of horrible sickness came over him. "I must be courageous," he exhorted himself mentally. All his strength was suddenly gone, as if taken out by a hand. Then by a mighty effort of will it came back, because he was afraid of fainting in the street, and being picked up by the police with the key of his lodgings in his pocket. They would find Alden there, and then, indeed, he would be undone. Strangely enough, it was this fear which seems to have kept him up to the end. The passers-by were rare. They came upon him suddenly, looming up black in the snowflakes close by, then vanishing all at once without footfalls. It was the quarter of the very poor. Razumov noticed an elderly woman tied up in ragged shawls. Under the street lamp she seemed a beggar off duty. She walked leisurely in the blizzard, as though as he had no home to hurry to, she hugged under one arm a round loaf of black bread with an air of guarding a priceless booty. And Razumov, averting his glance, envied her the peace of her mind, and the serenity of her fate. To one reading Mr. Razumov's narrative, it is really a wonder how he managed to keep going as he did along one interminable street after another on pavements that were gradually becoming blocked with snow. It was the thought of Alden locked up in his rooms, and the desperate desire to get rid of his presence which drove him forward. No rational determination had any part in his exertions. Thus, when on arriving at the low eating house he heard that the man of horses, Zamyanich, was not there, he could only stare stupidly. The waiter, a wild-haired youth in tarred boots and a pink shirt, exclaimed, uncovering his pale gums in a silly grin, that Zamyanich had got his skin full early in the afternoon, and had gone away with a bottle under each arm, to keep it up amongst the horses, he supposed. The owner of the vile den, a bony short man in a dirty cloth caftan coming down to his heels, stood by, his hands tucked into his belt, and nodded confirmation. The reek of spirits, the greasy rancid steam of food got Razumov by the throat. He struck a table with his clenched hand and shouted violently, "You lie!" Bleary unwashed faces were turned to his direction. A mild-eyed ragged tramp drinking tea at the next table moved farther away. A murmur of wonder arose with an undertone of uneasiness. A laugh was heard too, and an exclamation, "There! There!" jeeringly soothing. The waiter looked all round and announced to the room, "The gentleman won't believe that Zamyanich is drunk." Greater than from a distant corner, a hoarse voice belonging to a horrible, nondescript, shaggy being with a black face like the muzzle of a bear grunted angrily, "The cursed driver of thieves. What do we want with his gentleman here? We are all honest folk in this place." Razumov, biting his lip till blood came to keep himself from bursting into imprecations, followed the owner of the den, who, whispering, "Come along, little father," led him into a tiny hole of a place behind the wooden counter, whence proceeded a sound of splashing. A wet and bedraggled creature, a sort of sexless and shivering scarecrow, washed glasses in there, bending over a wooden tub by the light of a tallow dip. "Yes, little father," the man in the long caftan said plaintively. He had a brown, cunning little face, a thin grayish beard. Trying to light a tin lantern, he hugged it to his breast and talked garrulously the while. He would show Zamyanich to the gentleman, to prove there were no lies told. And he would show him drunk. His woman, it seems, ran away from him last night. Such a hack she was. Thin. Phew. He spat. They were always running away from that driver of the devil, and he 60 years old too, could never get used to it. But each heart knows sorrow after its own kind, and Zamyanich was a born fool all his days. And then he would fly to the bottle. Who could bear life in our land without the bottle? Apostrophe apostrophe he says. A proper Russian man, the little pig. Dot 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 be pleased to follow me. Rasm of crossed a quadrangle of deep snow enclosed between high walls with innumerable windows. Here and there a dim yellow light hung within the four square mass of darkness. The house was an enormous slum, a hive of human vermin, a monumental abode of misery towering on the verge of starvation and despair. In a corner the ground sloped sharply down, and Razumov followed the light of the lantern through a small doorway into a long cavernous place like a neglected subterranean byre. Deep within, three shaggy little horses tied up to rings, hung their heads together, motionless and shadowy in the dim light of the lantern. It must have been the famous team of Alden's escape. Razumov peered fearfully into the gloom. His guide pawed in the straw with his foot. Here he is. Ah! The little pigeon. A true Russian man. No heavy hearts for me, apostrophe he says. Bring out the bottle and take your ugly mug out of my sight. Apostrophe apostrophe ah! 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 That's the fellow he is. He held the lantern over a prone form of a man, apparently fully dressed for outdoors. His head was lost in a pointed cloth hood. On the other side of a heap of straw protruded a pair of feet in monstrous thick boots. All was ready to drive, commented the keeper of the eating house. Proper Russian driver that. Saint or devil, night or day is all one to Zamyanich, when his heart is free from sorrow. I don't ask who you are, but where you want to go, apostrophe he says. He would drive Satan himself to his own abode, and come back chirruping to his horses. Many a one he has driven who is clanking his chains in the merchants' mines by this time. Razumov shuddered. Call him, wake him up, he faltered out. The other set down his light, stepped back and launched a kick at the prostrate sleeper. The man shook at the impact, but did not move. At the third kick he grunted, but remained inert as before. The eating housekeeper desisted, and fetched a deep sigh. You see for yourself how it is. We have done. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.